I'm going to call this March 10th, 2016 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Chairman Nelly.
Here.
Mayor Silverberg. Chairman Bolivar.
Here.
Chair Randall. Board Member Fassette.
Here.
Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne. Council Member Snyder.
Here.
Council Member Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Evans. Delegate Hugo. Delegate Minshew. Mr. Garzinski.
Here.
Ms. Bushu.
Here.
Mayor Foreman. Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I will say we have spoken to Mayor Silverthorne and Mayor Silber, no, and Mayor and Chairman Randall, both of whom have budget hearings tonight or budget presentations tonight. And Mayor Silverberg is coming later. She, I think, is attending a funeral this afternoon, but we'll be here a little later. With that said, we have our first item to come before we have the minutes of the January 14th meeting, which I believe were sent out in advance. Any comments, changes on that? The motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Parrish, seconded by Mrs. Bolivar. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
One abstention.
Abstention from Mr. Grzynski and Mr. Snyder. Now we go to the transaction update. Mr. Jasper.
Chairman, now members of the authority, good evening. My presentation tonight is going to be very simple because I'm going to just ask Ms. Spear to press play on the machine there. And what you're looking at is the transaction website and specifically the first video produced by the authority. This will provide an overview of the transaction process. And after it plays, which will be about 4 minutes, we'll just have a few comments and can take any questions you have at that time. The presentation was produced for a number of reasons, or the video was produced for a number of reasons. Firstly, we're in the process right now of briefing member jurisdictions, typically governing bodies, sometimes transportation commissions, and we are including the towns in these briefings. We're doing this for a couple of reasons. First, to emphasize why it's important to participate in the development of a transaction. And secondly, to request support from the member jurisdictions to encourage their residents and businesses to get involved in our upcoming spring outreach activities. So to that end, in front of you, you have an additional flyer which I'd like to draw your attention to regarding our spring outreach plans. Perhaps the most important word here is the word tentative. Some of these events haven't been completely nailed down yet, and I can't rule out the possibility that others may change. But we just wanted to give you an idea of what it is we're planning to do across the region. 5 workshops and 10 what we call pop-up events. Essentially, what we're trying to do here, if you recall from last year when we presented the results of the benchmark survey, that indicated a very low level of awareness of transaction, which is quite at odds with your intention to get a high degree of public engagement in this process. So we think that by approaching outreach in this way through a combination of workshops and going to events to meet with people rather than expect or hope they'll come and meet with us might be a bit more effective. The purpose of both types of events is to introduce transaction and its goals and to seek inputs on transportation issues, needs, travel patterns, and also to give us some input on some of the technical work related to future scenarios. As soon as we finalise this list, we'll post it on the website, but it's getting fairly close. We are going to work with your, or coordinate with your PIOs to hopefully get the word out, because the authority is still kind of in its infancy in terms of its social media footprint, and we really, really do need your help to kind of leverage your footprint, as it were, to get the word out, because we can do all of this, but if the public don't engage with us, it will be largely to no avail. And certainly no offer of help will be turned away.
Ask a quick question. There's just something that jumps out of the page. Are we having a workshop at 10 in the morning on a Sunday at a Catholic church?
That's the plan.
Okay. We'll talk about it.
Really?
That surprises me. That's...
Our consultant has done similar events. This one is specifically targeted at a Spanish-speaking audience, and that is their recommendation to make sure we kind of capture that kind of sub-segment of the
Is the workshop, it says, because it does say en español, is it entirely in Spanish or is it a bilingual presentation?
It'll be bilingual. Okay. There will be translators present, and it'll be focused on Spanish-speaking.
Mr. Jasper, this video, who's the audience?
The audience, as I mentioned, in the first round of audience is the jurisdictions themselves, their governing bodies, and the second round is the public.
Not to be critical, but the critical does nothing for them. I find them look like a bureaucratic government video. So you can take that back to your engineers.
Sure. Well,
just let me say, it's not meant to hold a lot of info. Well, it's just to let you know what transaction is
and
what to
expect.
Because
I felt like I was sitting in a TSA briefing.
Okay. Thank you.
The final comment I had on transaction was that... MTA staff and our consultant team are working with the jurisdictional agency staff to compile a database of candidate regional projects right now. We're not looking to do a formal call for projects, but rather a much more comprehensive search for projects, on a more one-on-one basis with the jurisdictions. So, but we just wanted you to be aware that that activity is ongoing.
Any questions? Just a quick one. When you're at these places out in the community, it's kind of some of them down below in the pop-up locations particularly look pretty good. What would you be doing? Is this just setting up a booth and people walking to you, or are you asking them to fill out a survey or a questionnaire or what?
We'll have a table, a couple of tables in a booth or tented environment, whatever you know, is appropriate for the particular event. We'll have a combination of folks there from the consulting team, from MBTA, and from the jurisdictions and agencies to basically interact with people to encourage them to tell us about transportation needs. We'll have tablets there to kind of capture information to do some simple data collection. And
there would be on each of the tablets, for example, if you've got a bunch of iPads there or something, and it's like take 5 minutes and fill out this questionnaire, answer these questions. Is it consistent so that you can actually tabulate?
That's correct. Yeah, we wouldn't necessarily make people sit down and do it. We'd probably try and work through it.
Talk
people through it so that you know, if people didn't feel comfortable with the technology, they wouldn't have to sit and use the technology. If they wanted to, they could.
Will there be any takeaways in terms of physically getting something?
We're still working on the details. We primarily want people to kind of be aware that of the social media that we've set up and the website that we've set up, because there's more interaction opportunity on the website. There will be some basic information about what transaction is and what will happen.
And how to access the website.
And how to access the website. Well, you've already seen the contact cards we've produced. Making those available as well.
Mr. Chairman, just another question, if I may. You mentioned earlier that you were going to each of the jurisdictions. I assume the same kind of conversation will take place there. Do you plan on attending our meetings and making any sort of presentation?
The plan has been to meet with the governing body of each member jurisdiction. In some cases, we've met with the Transportation Commission at the suggestion of jurisdictional staff, whatever they felt was the most appropriate body.
We're also meeting with, and this is, we're reaching out to some of the chambers and, you know, the special interest groups, if you will, to make sure that we're out as much as we can be regarding what's going on with the update so that we can get the engagement on the front end. Instead of when we have a proposed list of projects and analysis, we want some input on the front end instead of later on in the process.
Okay.
I think the pop-up idea is really good to piggyback on existing activities and to have a presence. You know, we're going to the people so that, you know, so that they have an opportunity to, you know, to know what's going on. And I'd like to suggest if there is room for any more. I believe that the weekend, Friday, June 10th through Sunday, June 12th, is the Fairfax Fair, Celebrate Fairfax, which is the biggest event that Fairfax County does. Springfest is a good size turnout, but the Fairfax Fair, the Celebrate Fairfax that weekend, is really pretty huge. And I think if we could have some kind of a presence there, that would get a lot of people, a lot of traffic.
I will follow up with the consultant team to explore that, but thank you for the suggestion.
Because it looks like there isn't something else that's planned on those days, so if we could try to squeeze in one more, that would be great.
Thank you.
Mr. Stark. We have a similar sort of event analysis on Memorial Day, so you may want to write that down as well.
Any questions, comments? Mr. Jasper? Ms. Goyer?
It's exciting to be here to update you on the status of what was the very first regional grant that you made for the Route 7 alternatives analysis, which will identify a transit service for a 14.5-mile stretch ranging from Alexandria to Tyson's Corner. It is truly a regional project, and I think it's also very emblematic of the kinds of things that the commission set out to work with MBTA on in terms of incorporating transit as part of our integrated transportation system. We're excited because this new service can serve 18,000 riders, and that translates into the equivalent of 2 lane miles in each direction. That's a huge impact. It's 18,000 riders in total, 6,000 new transit trips over the course of the project. My job tonight is just to give you context about where we stand, and I have with me Dan Goldfarb from the commission and Mike Flood from Parsons Brinckerhoff, who's been the lead of our consultant team to review what we've learned to date. Next month, we will present a recommendation on the preferred alternative, on the mode and the alignment, as well as a funding plan. And the funding plan is something that is new from when we did the first phase of the study. It's significant because it will allow us to proceed if we choose to with New START funding, and it also lays the groundwork for looking for other types of funding to make this preferred option a reality. We will have an extensive period of public comment, of engagement through traditional and social media, as well as public meetings held in June, and then we will take it back to the commission to accept that final recommendation. In the meantime, we've been working on how to sustain the project irrespective of which mode is chosen. And we've been working with the jurisdictions, particularly the four that are in the footprint or touch it, to identify a scope of work and potential funding to look at initial conceptual engineering work. That is my introduction. Now I'm going to turn it over to the experts, Dan.
So I'm just going to walk you through the project since this is the first time we're talking about it. To MBTA. I just want to set the context for the corridor. And overall, we have a population growth in the corridor of about 34%, with a really large population growth in Tyson's. When we look at job growth, it's close to balancing that at 36%, with, again, the largest growth being in Tyson's. But throughout the corridor, we see growth. But Tyson's is really a driving force in this corridor, and what we have found useful in our communications with the public is to talk about Tyson's in the context of what it will look like by the year 2040. And if you think about it, it'll be almost as dense and as the downtown business areas of Houston and Seattle. So that kind of gives you a good picture of what is at one end of the corridor. So with that, with the, you know, the, how the corridor is growing, right, our goal is to put in a high-capacity transit service that connects people with economic opportunities, increase transportation choice, helps move more people in the corridor by providing a faster trip and offering higher quality of service. So the questions that we've come to look at that we're trying to answer with this study, phase two of this study, is what type of transit service best serves the people and the businesses in the corridor? And we have a TSM alternative, which is just where we try to maximize the service that's out there today and is low intent, is a low capital intensive alternative. But then the two modes we're really looking at are a BRT and an LRT. And then the next question after mode is, where should it go? What should the termini be? We know Tyson's is one, but on the southern, eastern end of the corridor, we're looking at King Street and Mark Center as other termini points. And then the question would be, do we stop at East Falls Church? That's another key question. Do we leave the corridor, go to the East Falls Church Metro? And then a question, third question is, how do we make it financially viable? And that will be, that's a study that's currently going on within the study. And that'll be, as the timeline pointed out, that'll be presented to our commission at our next commission meeting. Okay. So the alternatives I talked about, really we're looking at how do you compare BRT and LRT once you have the no capital alternative. But one of the things that most interesting which drives ridership is that overall we see that when we have a light rail or BRT, when we have set aside roadway for it, its own dedicated lanes, we see about a 50% saving in travel time. And that is a major impact on ridership. And what's interesting is that for trips that stay within the corridor, new trips that are now transit trips that stay within the corridor, we can see almost two-thirds of those new trips are not work trips. They're for recreation, for school, for shopping. So this is just not a commuter type of service. This serves all the trips in the corridor. So when we look at some of the questions to see of the number of new transit riders, LRT versus BRT overall in the corridor, we see that the numbers are about within 10% difference, which isn't a huge difference given that we're doing a forecast out to the year 2040. So we don't see a significant difference there. When we look at the question as to the stopping at King Street versus stopping at Mark Center, we don't see a big difference in ridership there. So other factors, ridership won't be a determination as to which are the termini here or the mode. But we do see when we go to East Falls Church Metro and connect into that, we do see a significant change in ridership. There's 38% higher ridership when we connect to East Falls Church. So we can that kind of gives a picture about how mode and alignment's working. What I want to point out about the cost estimate that we did a very gross cost estimate because we're in a preliminary stage. But things to remember that are important is that with the modes, if you have an LRT mode, one of the biggest cost items in the cost estimate is the yard. If you have LRT, you need to have space to store your trains within that corridor, and that adds cost. If you have LRT, we need structure around Seven Corners and around the East Falls Church Metro, and that drives the cost. So what we see when we look at the cost is that the LRT alternatives are about two to three times the cost of the BRT alternative per capital. What we wanted to make sure was that our cost estimates were in line with other systems. So we looked at systems around the Commonwealth and around the region to see that our estimates were well within what you would expect. So we feel we have reasonable gross estimates. When we look at operating costs, the cost to operate a light rail would be about twice as much as to operate a BRT. And that has to do with the servicing of the infrastructure. You have wires to take care of. You have tracks to take care of. You have a vehicle that's different than a bus. So those things are all leading us to the next phase, which we will present at our commission in April, which is which mode and which alignment to go forward with. And this slide just kind of gives you a snapshot comparing each of them and highlights what I just went over. It's a nice summary to compare them. So with that, we can answer some questions.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone so successfully go through a PowerPoint presentation. That was terrific. I have a question on slide, it's not a number, job growth. It was like the third one.
Sure.
No, I'm sorry, it's the one right before that, a growing quarter.
I'm going to get everybody dizzy by bouncing back.
I'll tell you, I look at that and I go, what? False? What is that? What is that number?
Oh, so I should say that we aggregated TAZs to make a district. So the district might not hold directly into the jurisdiction boundaries of Falls Church. The district will be much wider. It's the area between Tyson's and Seven Corners within our transit corridor.
Is it people living there?
That's population, yeah.
That's kind of I just find that startling because it either shows how few people live in Tyson's, and I know, relatively speaking, it's way down from jobs, but that's stark.
I think some of these two might go into the Arlington, East Falls Church area, to be fair.
I guess, but it's still all pretty much single. There are some modest, mid-rise buildings, but it's single family. And is that really what you see as the residential area that's in the shed of using the system? Because I still find it a little odd, honestly.
I think we were looking at, what it's just not the walkability from the system. I mean, this we were trying to define the corridor in an aggregated way that it would make sense, that we wouldn't have. We wanted to have a simple, right, 20 by 20 matrix or 10 by 10 matrix when we evaluated things. So it's kind of a summary for us to judge for our analytical purposes more than display.
Maybe just from practical purposes of how people interpret that, Falls Church is a small place. I mean, there are a total of 10,000 or 12,000 people. So it just seems like a strange message.
Now, maybe a good point would be to put this into a smaller aggregation and then just show those parts that are reasonable. Yeah, that by us grouping things together and trying to be complete, it's like Greater Falls Church. It's just not Falls Church, and that's the problem.
It looks like it reaches like 40 miles to the
south. Yeah, now I understand.
Although, I mean, say this,
the metropolis of Falls Church.
I remember something that Mr. Connolly used to say a lot is that there are 10 times more people who will tell you they live in Falls Church but don't than there are people who live in Falls Church. We have the same thing with my district in the city of Manassas. There's far more people in my district who will tell you they live in Manassas than actually live in Manassas. I mean, I think, and I recognize you didn't do this on zip code basis per se, but if Falls Church means Falls Church zip codes, that number might be right.
We can reallocate
a crazy number of Fairfax County residents who will tell you they live in Falls Church, and most of them have no idea where the jurisdictional boundary is. They probably know they pay their property taxes too, but they just don't know.
I have one other question, and this is the slide that says questions: where should it go? How do we make it financially viable? That one, which is where you have the map of these alternate routes. And this is something that I'd heard before at a presentation. It absolutely strikes me from everything you've shown today that it has to hit that metro at East Falls Church. I mean, it just adds dramatically to the users, and it gives people that reason to get on and connect to the heavy rail system, you know, in a way that's it's the best place. But what happens when, and a lot of that Route 7 is single family. It's an area of Falls Church. I bet a lot of people don't want a lot of activity. You have to go 10 miles an hour through there now. But what about the crossover to get onto Roosevelt? Because when you go through Seven Corners right now, it's very difficult getting through there. And I know in the longer range plan that Fairfax has adopted, there's a wonderful crossover that would completely simplify this. But what's the timing, and does all your analysis, is it based on today's system and sort of getting through there, or is it based on the proposed master plan of Fairfax?
It is, as we looked at this, we were looking at 2040 conditions for planning purposes. And we did work, we have a technical advisory committee, which has representatives from the jurisdiction. So we have worked with Fairfax County, but we are looking at, you know, how would this operate in the future because it is such a serious investment. But I think you do bring up good points that if we went out there to build it today, there would certainly be challenges getting up to East Falls Church Metro and around there. And the county staff, Arlington County staff, have pointed out that metro station is at capacity for transit service with buses. So part of the next step would be thinking about how this plays into East Falls Church Metro redevelopment.
I will say that for that section that you're talking about, particularly for the light rail, we had to assume that there was a structure to get through that area that doesn't exist today. We actually built that cost estimate into the light rail option, recognizing that it can't function through that type
of. But what about for the BRT option? Did you build
that?
The BRT
was assumed to be on street.
On the existing street,
yeah.
And that is built into the time savings and everything. So
right.
You've actually built in some real slow time getting through that.
Well, I don't know what the 2040 capital program is for improvements to that area, and whether that piece of road infrastructure you're talking about would be there at that period.
So wait a minute,
if it
just confused me a little bit.
Yeah.
Honestly, you said for the LRT you had to build into these costs building.
Right.
The bridge over.
That's correct.
But for BRT,
right?
I don't know what you just said.
So basically, you know, one of the issues with the turns are very challenging in a rail vehicle, right? So part of this planning level engineering assessment is to go look at the corridor and see where a vehicle could make a turn or not make a turn. So in that area in particular, and as it comes out the other side of East Falls Church, our rail engineer said it's just too challenging. You most likely have to build a structure in that area to get it through that part of the...
Get it over onto Mulholland.
Exactly.
Okay.
So in those two areas, we assume that it would be on structure because of the challenging current conditions.
So again, what about BRT?
Yeah, for BRT, it could travel. It could make the turns.
BRT, there's no cost built in for that.
That's correct.
Future,
that's
and
correct.
I don't know whether Alec Fairfax anticipates having it by 2040, but
right. It
is not included
right. For
that. So they're going on the existing roads
that's
and
correct.
Sort of winding around,
that's
and that's
correct.
Built into the time differential
that's
too.
Correct. Yeah, the way these things are done is. You have to have a set future condition. You can't have a malleable future condition. You have to say that everything that's going to exist in 2040 is an existing capital plan, like your long-range transportation plan. The funded projects have to be in there and approved
right. In
order for it to be included in the assumptions built into the planning assumptions that we're doing. So if that structure is not in an approved plan, we cannot include it in our work. Rigging the planning process.
Chairman, I yield to Chairman.
Thank you. So with LRT, that would be more expensive because you would need to have a yard.
And structure. And electricity.
Okay. So, and that's built into this ballpark cost.
Yes.
But with BRT, you still would have a need for storage somewhere for those vehicles, would you not? And right?
Yes, correct.
That was built in on
a rough price,
but yeah, it doesn't have to be. It would be an expansion of a garage, so it's a cheaper price. It assumes some construction fee that you would build onto.
Yard. The other thing to keep in mind is, as Dan was saying, that you know the rail yard has to be. You know, along the alignment, there's no, it has to be obviously, but it kind of makes sense intuitively, but sometimes you have to say it, and then
very expensive real estate.
Exactly. And the BRT can share a bus depot
somewhere
else if it's fitted to be able to service the BRT vehicles, right?
And so that has been sort of calculated
in
that there probably would be some need to expand something.
That's correct.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, with the BRT. And I guess also with the LRT, knowing that, you know, it needs to be within the alignment of the system. Did you look at locations
No.
Okay, because
I guess it's not in Fairfax County. No, we didn't go as far as to identify
as sort of
operation
scoping
domains.
Out,
that's
scoping out
no.
And seeing where there might be.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I typically work on project at this level because it's relatively easy. The step forward from here, it starts to get much harder when you start to look at design and right-of-way impacts and required areas for operation and, you know, for the lots, it starts to get a lot more challenging for me. Yeah.
My question was to that. Your cost estimate, I know they're very preliminary, are for the infrastructure itself, but not right-of-way, because there's a lot of intense usage as you go from Alexandria to Tyson's, especially business impact, that I imagine could spike these costs pretty significantly.
I might correct me if I'm wrong, but
if you're having a dedicated line,
right? They use a gross number that would be so much per mile that would include a gross number for utilities that have to be moved, you know, pavement that has to be put up. But it's very gross. It doesn't look at that you hit on some very valuable property or you hit on some utility that is huge. Down there, and now you have a big construction. It was just to give a comparison. Mike, do you want to talk about right away? We looked at a rough footprint, I believe. And the next step we see is to go out there and do a conceptual engineering study. We would really identify right of way needs And the goal would be to work with our jurisdictions to do that and use it. Like right now, we're kind of leading, right? The idea would be in that type of study, we'd work with the jurisdictions in a very equal way. But that's certainly the next step is this conceptual engineering phase to identify things like that.
So those we heard last week when we had the county, cities, and towns in before the CTV about Northern Virginia specifically is what throws us out of kilter with the rest of the Commonwealth is our high land acquisition costs. Mm-hmm. It's a real nemesis. Hangs around our neck, right, Tom? I mean, so that's why I asked that question.
Yeah, and it's as Dan pointed out, it's like a percentage applied to the overall gross cost that's based on similar systems from around the country.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Have you done a ridership study yet on this?
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
Completed a ridership study.
Could you explain that, how the ridership works in that? Let's say I get on the metro, the Pentagon City, and I go to is it Metro Center? That's one ride, correct? And that counts, right?
We should clarify. That means one trip, you mean?
Yeah, one trip, right.
One trip would be from where you started to where you ended.
Right, that's one trip. And then if I got back on the Metro ride.
But did you get to your destination
yet?
Yes,
yeah, I got there. I got up, went shopping.
Okay, that's one trip.
Okay. Then I got back on and went back to Pentagon City.
That's the second trip.
That's two trips.
Right.
So why that's important, we've been counting riders like that since UMTA, right, mm-hmm. since really the 60s. And I won't be here when this goes forward, but just for the elected officials, especially those who are newly elected, we count by riders that's just me, and we count for two trips. But I'm a customer, I'm not a rider.
So
we don't look at it in terms of customers, we look at it in terms of riders. I think that thinking needs to change within the industry. But just to keep that in mind, we see the ridership study, that's not, 10,000 people. You're going to think that's 10,000 rides.
Trips,
correct. Exactly.
We did break it out in our presentation.
That's right.
We did highlight when it was a trip, which is just going there,
yeah.
Like you're too. And
right.
We did highlight when it's a new rider. And that person obviously is in the terms of the demand forecast is coming back on that same mode.
And just with these new smart care boxes that are being installed, they're going to be able to really clearly show that. So just something to think about in the future.
And you helped to fund it for our presentation.
It's kind of like in human services, you have visits versus
yeah, exactly.
Unduplicated clients. But on the time projections, you must have figured out what percentage of this, each of these optional routes, it has a dedicated lane for the bus or the rail, right?
Right.
Can you share that with us? Because
yeah.
Obviously that's one of the greatest assets that makes a BRT different than a bus, just a bus.
Oops, went too far. It doesn't. Can you bring up the last slide?
The last slide.
Yeah, the last slide is just a map.
Yeah, the corridor.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Here we go. So, I should say, because everyone's going to say, well, this can't fit here, this can't fit there, but for the stage we are in this study, which is developing to see which mode is more sensitive and developing preliminary ridership estimates, what we assume, we had a TAC, like I said, and we talked with the TAC. We assume that there would be a dedicated lane from Tyson's Corner to the City of Falls Church. I should let Mike explain this because he does it much better than me. It's much more entertaining. Once you're in Falls Church, the bus would share a lane with vehicles that are making right turns only. So, bat lanes. Yeah, they were called bat lanes. And that if you...
Bat lanes?
Yeah, Mike always uses Ocean City as an example. It's a good example. And that if you're in Ocean City, Maryland, there's a lane for transit only. But if you're making an immediate right turn, you're allowed in that lane. So that's the kind of infrastructure you would have in Falls Church.
Business access.
I have middle-aged children, and I'm literally thinking, what does Bruce Wayne
exactly.
do?
Yeah.
Get
in the bat lane.
My boys would ride.
See, they love the bus. They could ride in the bat lane.
It's not quite as exciting as that, unfortunately. It's just a bus in the right lane that they share it with vehicles. Yeah, turn right, turning vehicle.
And then once that would also be on 29 as you go to the metro station. And then once you proceed south, when you left the metro station, and again, we would envision a bus-only facility, whether it's median or curb lane, and that would continue down to the city of Alexandria. In the city of Alexandria, it would be in mixed traffic until Mark Center. There would be, well, there would not be a bat lane or dedicated right away. So, does that answer the question?
That does. That does. I mean, that's a great map, actually. And I've never heard of a bat lane.
Bat.
Never heard of that. But it sounds like actually a bat lane, by and large, is not far different from a dedicated lane. I mean, it's pretty good, right? It's a lot different than being in mixed traffic. I would put it a lot closer to a dedicated lane than being in mixed traffic, right?
Yeah. And it allows for those right turns.
Yeah. And it would go straight down Route 7.
Until Lee Highway, US 29. And, well, that's what we tested, if it would go straight down Route 7 or leave Route 7 to go to East Falls Church Metro. And we found in the ridership forecast there's a significant improvement in ridership when we tie into the East Falls Church Metro.
But in the city of Alexandria, it's assumed to be a bat lane in the section, but we did get feedback from the city of Alexandria that King Street would have to be a mixed traffic operation. You're not reconstructing that section of King Street to accommodate. And then the alignment that's shown coming down Beauregard is actually your West End Transitway line. It's the same alignment.
Right. Yeah. So then you would connect to our BRT.
That's right.
At that point.
Yeah. So, and that's what we've been kind of talking about recently is once we're able to enter the city of Alexandria, what's the best endpoint? What's the best termini on the city side? So is it Mark Center? Is it Van Dorn? Is it King Street?
Right. And what is your thinking, Carlos?
Well, I think we're leaning towards Mark Center, I believe. So.
Not going all the way to the metro?
Well, I mean, the reality is if it's a
sort of like a crosstown bus, in a way.
It is, but you're already operating a service in there that you've already invested in as a city, your West End Transitway. So would we duplicate that service, or would we terminate it at an identified transit center that people could transfer or do whatever from that area? So that's what we'd be thinking through.
And I'm sorry, I was late. A pillar of the community passed away recently, and the wake was I needed to stop by and pay my respects to the family tonight. Alexandria, as many of y'all know, we have put in a BRT along Jeff Davis Highway. And then there's the West End Transitway that is on paper that we're committed to. But to see what you're, to discuss and hear your thoughts, that's really interesting. And one of the things that we know is going on in the region is that there's crosstown, well, the purple line, I guess, is like a crosstown metro line. It's very expensive and very controversial, but they're finally going to do it. And in a way, this is a less costly, less invasive way of doing this.
Similar connectivity, I would say.
Similar connect. That's what I'm saying. So, in general, I would think we'd want to connect metro to metro somehow. But that's just off the cuff, But I'm interested in your expertise and
I mean, one of the things to keep in mind is no one is going to ride from Van Dorn to Tyson's. Like, they're going to ride from Van Dorn to Mark Center. They're going to ride from Mark Center to Skyline. They're going to ride from Skyline to East Falls Church. They're going to ride from East Falls Church to somewhere towards Tyson's Corner. They're going to ride from West Falls Church to Tyson's Corner. You know, very few people take any transit line anyway from end to end. You know, that's not, there's a mixture of trips that happen in there. So at some level, you have to start thinking about where can you terminate a service without, like, how many people are going to travel down Route 7 and travel through Mark Center and continue down to the Van Dorn Metro? Or does it make sense to terminate it at the Mark Center?
It's just hard
I'm
to know.
I'm with her and at a metro.
Yeah.
But you guys will look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Right. That would be my guide.
Yeah.
And by the way, if it's, we can always adjust.
Yeah.
I suppose, and be nimble.
Yeah.
That's one of the great things about BRT.
Right. Frankly. Well, I would, you know, if you implement your West End, you'll have a BRT connection from Van Dorn to Mark Center. So would we be redundant with that, or would we try to work in a service plan where that whole thing works together?
Yes.
So that's really what we're looking at.
Certainly welcome y'all's input and support.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay. We have the consent agenda. We have three items. We have a motion on this.
I move the consent agenda, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second the consent agenda.
Motion by Mr. Parrish, second by Ms. Bulova. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Three action items. First, item 9, approval of participation in the Virginia Retirement System and 457 Deferred Comp Plan. Mr. Parrish.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me see if I can find our presentation here. Okay, the MBTA Finance Committee on the 3rd of March, I believe it was, took up several issues. One of those issues that we took up, in addition to the items that were on the consent agenda, was the 457 Deferred Compensation Plan. I see Mr. Longy here and, of course, Ms. Backman, but it's a pretty straightforward item. The authority directed the staff to examine the employee retirement system and other benefit programs to make them consistent with other jurisdictions here in Northern Virginia. The employer is not obligated to make any contributions, but it certainly allows the employees to do so. And the cost participation with the authority is estimated at $150 per year, which is in the budget. I don't know whether anyone has any further questions with regard to that, but seeing and hearing that, I would move approval of the participation in the Virginia Retirement System 457 Compensation Plan.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Ridgewell. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Parrish, operating approval of expenditure transfer of $124,700 of the Regional Revenue Fund budget to the operating budget.
Okay, very good. I'll ask Mr. Longy to assist me with this one.
Yes, sir. The $124,000, which is made up of our financial advisor services, $72,000, an estimate for bond counsel fees of $50,000, and $2,700 in bond trustee fees. These were originally budgeted in the regional revenue budget, and it was determined that they're more appropriate to be budgeted in the operating budget. So what this action item would do is simply transfer the expenditure for FY16 from the regional revenue into the operating budget. And we believe with some things we are doing in the operating budget that we can accommodate that expenditure there. It is also proposed to be in, it will stay in the operating budget from here on out. Of this amount, $122,000 will be reimbursed periodically when the authority does a financing to become cost of issuance. So if we have 2 years between financing, we would reimburse the operating budget $244,000 as cost of issuance for that through that financing.
Okay, very good, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I move that the authority approve the expenditure transfer of $124,700 for financial advisor services, bond counsel, and bond transfer or trustee fees from the regional revenue fund budget to the operating fund budget for 2016.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. And next, we have the approval of the FY 2022 CMAC and RST programming allocations. Do we need a presentation on this?
No. Unless you have questions about the packet, the agenda item.
Any questions about CMAC RSTP? Is there a motion?
Chairman.
Moving Ms. Bullen, seconded by Mr. Snyder. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Reports, Mr. Parrish, anything else from the Finance Committee tonight?
Not a thing, other than to say that we did meet on March 3rd as a committee. Ms. Bulova, thank you for that. Phyllis Randall, obviously Chairman Randall, was at the meeting as well. Jeanette was here as well. And, of course, myself, and I think, Mr. Chairman, at some point you might appoint the fifth member. But I want to thank the committee members for meeting, and it looks like a committee that's going to function very, very well.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Foreman isn't here. Anything we need from PCAC?
They did have their first meeting of the year, and it's the first meeting since May of last year, and we had a great turnout.
Excellent. New quorum rules.
New quorum rules did help.
Anything from TAC? Shalongi, you have anything else for us tonight?
Nothing to add to the written report, sir.
Ms. Backman?
Mr. Chairman, in addition to what's in my written report, I did want to note that it's come to our attention that the April 14th authority meeting could be problematic for some of you due to budget meetings. So I wanted to propose that we shift that meeting to April 28th. At 6 p.m. instead of 7 p.m. because that's the same night of the NBRC meeting.
I know that night, and let me say, she was, Ms. Backman was very generous in saying some of you. She means me, actually. we have budget markup that evening, so that's going to be a problem.
Wait,
Mr.
Chairman,
please.
Never mind.
You got done nothing here.
April 28th, Thursday, April 28th at 6 p.m.
The question I was going to have is, I know that in April we have to the big business item is to advertise the public hearing for the FY17 plan. Although advertising the public hearing doesn't tend to be a particularly controversial issue.
It's not a controversial. Well, I should say it usually is not a controversial issue, but
advertising budgets sometimes is not.
But I did want to make you aware of that was the action, one of the major action items that we had on tap for that April 14th meeting. In talking to Mr. Jasper, it really doesn't shake up the program schedule if you meet 2 weeks later.
Okay. So it meets the legal requirement.
This is a requirement. And I think that the governor hasn't signed the second one. We have legal requirements that apply to all public advertisements, and I believe a bill passed both houses, but probably hasn't been signed yet, that sets another requirement that the project list has to be published 15 days in advance. But that's actually a less restrictive rule than the existing public advertisement rules, right?
Yes.
Help me with those dates again.
Moving it to the 28th at 6 prior to the Northern Virginia Regional Commission.
Okay.
NVRC meets at 7:30.
It's at 7:30. It works really well if you don't mind making Penny gross mad.
Uh-huh. Am I asking me
no,
my mind?
It always works great, but Penny comes in mad, so maybe switch lines. That's the only... And I'm the one who has to bear the brunt on that one.
I'm holding time for an event, but I can just not do that event and do it. I think it works.
Evening's okay for me. Are you looking for a show of hands?
I'm looking for objections, I think. Do we require a vote to change it? I mean, the meeting calendar has been published. Do we need a vote to change that?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we need a vote. Okay. So this would be our last chance to take
that. So moved.
Okay. I was going to go a different direction, but sure. Let's get a motion from Special Second Member. Any discussion or objections to this? Any problems? We're going to assume it's okay. All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. What else?
The other issue, Mr. Chairman, I believe you made all of the committee appointments.
Oh, I was going to do my time. Sure.
Okay,
I'll do that.
Then we have one last scheduling issue regarding the potential adoption of the FY17 program.
Yes.
Right now, based on the calendar that we or scheduled project schedule calendar that we brought to you, the adoption date would be the second Thursday in July. And we do have potentially some new members coming on prior to or after that date. Some terms expire June 30th, and you and I had a conversation about potentially moving that data.
So let me say that the issue is that I won't be vague about it. Mr. Garzynski and Ms. Bashu's terms expire June 30th. Their replacements may not be named by that time, but we just won't know. And I think some jurisdictions have elections that would end current terms at June 30th, and I'm not predicting anyone wouldn't get reelected. But the advantage of having it on June 30th is that it would ensure that the authority membership who has participated in the process of building the FY 17 plan, and more importantly, the authority membership that participates in the public hearing in anticipation of that, is the authority membership that votes on the plan. If we hold it based on our current schedule, it is at best distinctly possible and downright likely that we will have brand new authority members at their first meeting adopting a project plan. And that just doesn't feel strictly transparent to me. So the question was, I think it makes sense for us to move it to June 30th for transparency purposes, but maybe someone has a problem.
What elections happen?
Cities. I mean, it's not many at this point.
Do any of us?
Does Menace part? No, you guys are both in Menace.
November now?
So it's no one has an election. I lied. Wait a minute. What about Fairfax City? They're still in May.
They're in May.
So Fairfax City, although tell me if I'm wrong. Well, I don't think that elections are going to be what creates the problem. The problem is going to be our two appointed members.
Can I just ask for this to Monica? Is this at any implication in terms of staff doing its work?
No, when I had discussed it with Chairman Noe, I said that if he did push it back prior to July 1, we would really need to have, or push it up, we would need to have a June 30th to allow enough time for the Planning and Programming Committee meeting to meet after the public hearing so we can consider the comments received on the program. So we think that we have enough time because right now we have the public hearing tentatively scheduled for June the 9th. That would give us enough time to come back to meet with Planning and Programming Committee to make a final recommendation to the authority on the final plan and make tweaks and adjustments.
So you're looking at June 30th as a date for the meeting?
Yes. A date for the authority meeting instead of the July...
And then let me throw one more thing in, is that there's another trigger involved in when we can do it, because we're only doing a one-year plan this year, but we have to adopt our plan after the CTB adopts theirs, which is in June.
There's likelihood that that's going to be pushed back to the last week in June right now. Very likely.
So, Mr. Chairman, what I propose we should...
Let me throw a wrench in this whole thing.
Yeah.
I think we should sit, you and I can sit...
Let's talk.
Yeah,
let's not make a decision on this tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. I think... Because that's a new detail.
Yes, it is.
Because, and for everyone's edification, the point is, we have to find out... There we have projects, the justification for which is that... The project is expected to receive funding from the HB2 process as well. If that hypothetical project doesn't get funding from the state, it becomes questionable as to whether it's wise for us to fund our portion of it, because the project is not then fully funded. And to some degree, vice versa, actually.
Right, because the state is saying that they will fully fund the project if it's included in the six-year program. We do have some projects that show up on your potential list for consideration of funding for FY17, and they were also submitted for HB2. So if they're funded, fully funded for HB2, you know, we don't want to overfund any projects, and then we'll have to come back and ask you to make adjustments anyway.
Let's see what happens. Let's talk to CTB staff and see what happens.
Was June 9th
Yes.
It is.
That's the current date.
That's the current meeting date.
Okay. Well, that is being changed. So, but what time does if it does happen on June 9th, what time does it start?
7 p.m.
And that's
the date that already.
Yes, that was your the second Thursday of the month adopted date.
Let's we'll come back with the recommendation on this next month.
And let me actually amend that. If I know it's not just personal to me, but I my engagement is like 5:30 to 6:30, so I wouldn't I'd be here by 7:15 or something.
And what we'll goes further, we I think the way we've done in the past is the meeting is convened at 7:00, and it's begun with a public presentation.
Okay, that is correct.
And then the public hearing begins a half an hour into the meeting. So that's not you wouldn't miss much.
Okay.
Because the presentation will be information that you will have already received, probably several times, frankly. In the anticipation. Okay. So we'll figure this out. We'll come back in April and figure this out.
Right.
Okay.
That is all I have.
Okay. And you took up the and then I have to do the appointments.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you. I said 2 months ago that I would do the appointments the following month and then we didn't meet, so I was calling people frantically yesterday. In all of these appointments, just so again, we have some new members here. Under our bylaws, the appointments are made by the chairman. These don't require a vote, but I just want to read them into the record for anybody. I think if I say something here that surprises you, I apologize. I think I've spoken to anybody about this. So our finance committee actually made the appointment several weeks ago. The let me share one more thing. The terms are staggered, but two of these committees are brand new committees. So in order to stagger them, some people will have a 1-year term, some will have a 2-year term, and that'll put us into a staggered position starting next year. The finance committee Mayor Parrish will be reappointed for a 2-year term, and he will also serve as chairman of that committee. Mayor Silverberg is appointed for a 2-year term. Chair Randall is appointed for a 2-year term. And Councilmember Rischel is in the midst of is halfway through a 2-year term, but is appointed as vice chairman of the committee. And just to round things out, Chairman Bullen is also halfway through a 2-year term that began last year. And those will be the 5 members of finance. The governance and personnel committee, Mayor Silverthorne is appointed for a 2-year term and will serve as chair. I am appointed for a 2-year term. Councilmember Snyder is appointed for a 1-year term and will serve as vice chair. Ms. Bashu will serve a 1-year term, and Delegate Minshew will be appointed for a 1-year term. And the Planning and Programming Committee, we have Chairman Bulova is appointed for a 2-year term and will serve as vice chair. Board Member Fassette is appointed for a 2-year term. Councilmember Rischel is appointed for a 2-year term. Chair Randall is appointed for a 1-year term, and I am appointed for a 1-year term and will serve as chairman of that committee. And let me make one more observation. The Planning and Program Committee is the successor to the Project Implementation Working Group. I will note that we have 14 voting members of this committee, and 11 people said they wanted to be on this committee. So we have more people who aren't on than who are. However, we will continue the practice of all members of the authority who are at the meeting will be full participants in the meeting, except previously we didn't have any voting rules, and then we always questioned when there wasn't we didn't know who to count when there was a vote. So these 5 members will serve as the voting members of the committee. However, we frequently have far more than 5 members at this particular committee because we discuss things that are important in every jurisdiction and every member, really, and everyone will always be allowed to participate in the meeting. While I'm chair. So, those are the appointments. Anything else? Anybody, any other business to come before the authority tonight? Thank you all very much. See you April 28th.
Good job, Mr. Chairman.